not until you tell me the truth.
Fuck,
he grits out, yanking at his hair.
Just let me go. I don't want you involved, T. Why are you making this so difficult?
His mask has finally failed. Gone is the aloof, indifferent face he's held in place all week while he's done his best to hide the anguish inside. Now, all I see is pain, desperation. This thing has been eating him up and he looks exhausted. Don't you get it? I say. I care about you. What other reason is there? Connor deflates. He collapses on the edge of his bed and drops his head in his hands. He's quiet for so long, I think he's given up. But then he finally speaks.
Last May, back home in California, Kai comes to me one day. I hadn't seen him in weeks and says he needs money, like a lot of money. He got in bad with a drug dealer and had to pay him back or the guy would fuck him up. I told him I don't have that kind of cash. So he says, you know, ask Max for money.
Connor raises his eyes as if checking to see whether I remember what he's told me about his relationship with his stepfather. I nod slowly.
Right. So I said, hell no, I can't do that. Kai gets pissed, like, fuck you, I thought we were friends, all that crap. But he doesn't push it. He just says he'll find another way and leaves. At the time, I thought he was exaggerating about the trouble he was in, that maybe he just wanted a new phone or some dumb shit and thought I could waltz into a giant gold vault and take whatever I wanted.
Connor takes a breath and rubs at his face, as if he's gathering energy.
So then maybe a couple weeks later, Max and I got into some stupid argument. I hadn't declared a major yet, and he was getting on my case about figuring out what I'm going to do with my life. So of course I get defensive, because what he really means is that I'm a loser who's never going to amount to anything if I don't become just like him. It turns into a full-on shouting match, and then I get pissed off and leave. I end up at Kai's place, tell him what happened, and he says, hey, you know, we can totally get back at him. Just say the word.
I approach the bed with timid steps and sit down, keeping several feet of space between us. And what did you say?
I said, fuck it. Let's do it.
He shakes his head, letting out a deep sigh. I can feel the anxiety wafting off him. How hard it is to admit all of this. How far he has to reach into himself to find the courage.
I gave Kai the alarm code and told him Max always keeps $3,000 in cash in his desk drawer for emergencies. I said I didn't want to know when it's going to happen. It'd be months before Max would even notice it was missing, and besides, that kind of money is nothing to the man. He'd spend that in a week on dinner and wine. Nobody gets hurt.
But Connor looks at me. Finally, for the first time in a week, he really looks at me.
So, one weekend, we all go to Tahoe. I wanted to stay behind, but Mom gave me a guilt trip about spending quality time together. So the house is empty for a few days, and Kai makes his move. He was probably high or wasted on some shit. The kid never had a fucking dimmer switch, you know? He slips in quiet enough, but then he trashes the place. He grabs one of Max's golf clubs from the garage and smashes up Max's office and the living room. We came home a couple days later, and it's obvious the place has been robbed. The messed up part is, Max blamed himself. Figured he must have forgotten to set the alarm. But whatever, no big thing, he says. Insurance will cover the damage.
My forehead wrinkles. They didn't wonder why nothing else was stolen? Connor barks out a sardonic laugh.
Nope. The cops decided some teenagers probably just wanted to trash the place. They said they'd seen it a million times, a crime of opportunity, and that maybe the teens got scared off by something.
So you got away with it?
Yeah, but that's the thing, right? The guilt tore me up from the moment we stepped inside the house and I saw what Kai did, what I did. Somehow, in my head, I convinced myself that it'd feel good to see the look on Max's face. But it fucking hurt. What kind of asshole trashes his own house? My mom was terrified for weeks afterward that whoever did it would come back. She couldn't sleep.
His voice cracks.
I did that to her.
My heart hurts for him. And Kai?
He found me at the beach a couple weeks later and was asking, you know, how'd it go? I told him I couldn't hang out with him anymore, that he'd gone too far and it was a bad idea to begin with. And that was it. We were through. In his head, he thought he was being a good friend, like he was sticking up for me or something. That's probably the best example anyone could give you of how his brain works.
I'm guessing he didn't take the breakup well?
Nope. I think more than anything, he was worried I'd rat him out. But I reminded him that doing so would be mutually assured destruction. And we went our separate ways.
Until Buffalo.
Buffalo.
He agrees ruefully.
Then Saturday at the beach. He followed me there, gave me the same old story. He owes money to bad people and they'll kill him if he doesn't get it. Except this time, he needs 10 grand.
Shit, I say under my breath. Connor laughs sadly in response.
Right?
You can't give him the money. He cocks his head at me. No, I'm serious, Connor. You can't give him the money. This time it's 10, next time it's 15, 20, 50. He's blackmailing you, right? That's what this is all about? Mutually assured destruction? And the contents of that envelope? I bet you didn't get the money from your family.
I don't have a choice, Taylor.
His eyes turn angry. Yes, you do. You can tell Max and your mom the truth. If you come clean, Kai has no more leverage. He'll leave you alone and you can finally get on with your life without worrying about the day he'll show up again to derail your whole life.
You don't know what you're talking about. You have no...
I know that because of the shame and embarrassment you feel. You've blown me off, fucked your family over, and done who knows what to get that money. When's it going to stop? When is it enough? I shake my head at him. There's only one thing you can do to fight back. Or you can be a slave to this secret forever.
Yeah. You know?
Connor gets up.
This really doesn't concern you. I told you the truth, and now I've got to go.
I jump up and try to intercept him, but he sidesteps me with little effort on his way to the door. I grab his hand as he turns his back on me. Please, I'll help you. Don't do this. He snatches his hand away. When he speaks, the coldness and detachment has returned.
I don't need your help, Taylor. I don't want it. And I definitely don't need some chick telling me what to do. You were right. We shouldn't be together.
He doesn't look back. Down the hallway and out the door, not a single hesitation. He just leaves me there with the poisoned memories of this room, with my makeup smeared and hair falling down. Connor fucking Edwards.
31. Connor. There was this girl when I was growing up, Daisy. She was around my age, lived a couple doors down in the old neighborhood, and she used to sit for hours in her driveway drawing with little rocks or broken pieces of cement because she didn't have chalk. When the sun turned the concrete slab into a griddle or the rain wrinkled her skin, she'd throw stuff at us when preteen Kai and I would ride past on our skateboards. Rocks, bottle caps, random trash, whatever was lying around. Her dad was mean as shit. We figured she was just like him. Then I watched one day from my porch. I watched her getting off the school bus, knocking on her front door. Her dad's truck was in the driveway and the TV inside so loud the whole neighborhood could hear the sports highlights. She kept knocking, this skinny girl in her backpack. Then trying the window when the bars had been torn off during a break-in and never replaced. And then finally giving up, resigned, and picking another rock from the side of the street that from some decaying part of the neighborhood eventually tumbled its way to her. Next, I watched Kai rolling down the sidewalk on his skateboard, stopping to talk to her, to taunt her. I watched as he did donuts over her drawings, then pour a soda out on the pictures and flick the bottle cap in her hair. And I got it then, why she threw stuff at us whenever we passed her. She was aiming for Kai. The next time she sat alone in her driveway, I brought my own rock and joined her. Eventually, we left the driveway and explored the world. We watched the highway from a tall tree, counted planes from rooftops. And one day, Daisy told me she was leaving, that when the school bus dropped us off, she was just going to walk away and go somewhere else. Anywhere else. You could walk away too, she'd urged. She had this magazine picture of Yosemite and got it in her head that she would live there, at a campground or something. Because they'd have everything you'd need, and it doesn't cost anything to camp, right? We talked about it for weeks, making plans. It's not that I truly wanted to leave, but Daisy needed so much for me to go with her. It was the loneliness she feared the most. Then she got on the bus one day, and she had purple bruises on her arms. She'd been crying, and suddenly it wasn't a game anymore. It wasn't some story we were writing about a great adventure to pass the time between school and sleep. When the bus pulled up at school, she looked at me, expectant, her backpack hanging heavier on her shoulders than normal. She said, "We leave today at lunch?" I didn't know what to say to her, how to not say the wrong thing. So I did something much worse. I walked away. I think that was the moment I learned I wasn't any good for anyone. Sure, I was barely 11 years old, so of course I wasn't running north with nothing but a backpack and a skateboard, but I'd let Daisy believe in me. I'd let her trust me. Maybe I didn't understand at the time what was really going on in her house, but on a conceptual level, I got the fucking gist, and yet I didn't do anything to help her. I simply became another in a long line of letdowns. I'll never forget her eyes, how in them I saw her heart break. I see them still, now. My hands shake, gripping the steering wheel. I barely see the road. It's like tunnel vision, everything narrow and far away. I'm driving by memory more than sight, a tightness in my chest that's been building for days now clamps down, climbing my throat. Suddenly it hurts to breathe. When the phone buzzes in the cup holder, I nearly swerve into oncoming traffic, startled by the sound that feels louder in my head. I hit the speakerphone button. "Yeah," I answer, forcing my voice to work. I can't hear myself. The static in my mind makes me feel like I'm underwater. "Making sure you're still coming," Kai says. There's noise in the background, voices and muffled music. He's already there at the stuffy Boston College bar where we arranged to meet. "On my way." "Tick tock." I end the call and toss my phone on the passenger seat. The ache in my chest becomes unbearable, clenching down so hard it feels like I might snap a rib. I cut the wheel and veer onto the shoulder, slamming on the brakes. My throat's closing as I frantically tear out of layers of clothing until I'm in just a wife beater and sweating. I lower the windows to fill the Jeep with cool air. The fuck am I doing? Head in my hands, I can't stop seeing her face, the disappointed look in her eyes. Not Daisy, the little girl from my past, but Taylor, the woman of my present. She expected so much better from me. Not what I'd done back then, but what I was choosing to do now. She wouldn't let me off the hook for acting like such a jackass this week, if only I were strong enough to make the right decision when she gave me the chance. Damn it, Edwards, grow a pair. I promised myself I'd be better for her and try to see myself through her eyes. See myself as more than just some gutter punk kid, or an aimless loser, or a walking one-night stand. She found the value in me, even when I couldn't, so why the hell should I let Kai take that from me? Because he hasn't just hijacked my life, he's stolen from Taylor. I should be at a dumb dance with my girlfriend, not having a panic attack on the side of the road. Shaking my head in disgust, I grab my discarded sweater and pull it on. Then I reach for the gear shift and put the Jeep in drive. For the first time in my life, I find the courage to respect myself. My first stop is Hunter's place. Demi answers the door, greeting me with an inquisitive, if somewhat hostile, look. I don't know how much she heard since I last spoke to Taylor or what Hunter might have said after he wrote me the check. I kiss her on the cheek and she lets me in. Demi kind of recoils in response. What's that for, weirdo? You were right, I say with a wink.
Well, obviously.
She pauses.
About what, though?
Hey, man. Hunter approaches us cautiously. Everything okay? It will be. I pull out the envelope of cash and hand it to him. Demi narrows her eyes at the handoff.
What's that?
She demands. Hunter takes the money confused. But why?
Answer me, monk,
grumbles Demi, tugging on Hunter's sleeve.
What's happening?
I shrug and answer Hunter. Don't need it anymore. He appears understandably relieved, though I don't envy the interrogation he's about to endure from his girlfriend. Go easy on him, I tell Demi. He's a good guy. You want to stay and order a pizza? Hunter offers. We're just chilling tonight. Can't. I'm late for a dance. Leaving Hunter's place, I call Kai. Already the tightness in my chest had subsided, and my hands are steady as the phone rings. You here? He says. I don't have your money. Don't fuck with me, bro. I make one phone call. I'm going to tell Max it was my fault. The resolve in my voice surprises me, and I become more assured of my decision with every word. I'll leave your name out of it for now, but if you call me again, if I so much as feel you sniffing around, I'll out you in a heartbeat. Don't try me, Kai. This is your last chance. I hang up on him, then, steeling my nerves, I make another call.
32. Taylor. I violently don't want to be here. As in, I'm considering grabbing a steak knife off the nearest table and taking a hostage on my way out a shattered window to make my escape. Sasha and I have taken up a strategic position near a stack of speakers to deter others from trying to talk to us. She also commandeered some expensive champagne, which is dribbling down our dresses as we drink straight from the bottle while watching Charlotte run around the dance floor, chastising sisters for twerking on their dates in front of concerned boomers. We had to leave the DJ booth because alumni kept asking Sasha to play Neil Diamond and ABBA, and she threatened to take the next one's eye out with a fork, so I forced her to take a break. You should go dance with Eric, I tell her, spotting him on the floor. He seems to be having a great time despite the fact that his dates all but abandoned him to the wolves. And miss the chance to judge everyone condescendingly from the corner? Do you not even know me? I mean it. Just because I'm resigned to wallow in self-pity doesn't mean you have to suffer with me. That's exactly what it means, she says. Or you could chug the rest of this bottle and get white girl wasted on the dance floor all over some overdressed trust fund boy. Not in the mood. Oh, come on. Sasha takes another swig of champagne and wipes her mouth with her arm, painting it with lipstick. We got all dressed up and shaved our legs. The least we can do is have something to regret in the morning. Ha. I already have regrets. For example, what the hell was I thinking when I picked out this ridiculous dress? The tight black fabric makes my tits look like two squished hams, and every fold and lump is pouring out like toothpaste from a tube. I feel disgusting, and I can't remember why I'd been so excited looking in the mirror and imagining Connor's face when he saw me. Oh, wait. I remember why. Because I'd let Connor fool me into believing I was beautiful, that he didn't see a chubby girl or just a pair of breasts, but me, all of me. He made me believe I was something desirable, worth having. And now I'm left with the ill-fitting disappointment of what could have been. I'm annoyed to notice tears dripping down my cheeks, and I tell Sasha I'm going to evacuate some of that champagne. The restroom is stuffed with kappas touching up their makeup, one stall occupied by a loud vomiter who has two kappas holding her hair back. Another stall contains Lisa Anderson, who's locked herself in with her phone and is drunk texting her now ex, Corey, over the protestations of her sisters banging on the door. After using the toilet, I'm washing my hands at the sink when Abigail and Jules walk in, laughing. My stomach knots when their malicious gazes take in me and my smudged mascara. "Taylor!" Abigail calls loud enough to make sure everyone's paying attention. "I haven't seen Connor all night. He didn't stand you up, did he?" "Leave me alone, Abigail." She looks perfect, of course. Shimmering silver sequin dress and perfectly curled platinum hair. Not a strand out of place. No sweat beating at her hairline or makeup dripping down her neck. Barely human. "Uh-oh." She comes to stand behind me, watching us in the mirror with a mocking pout. "What's wrong? Come on. We're your sisters, Tay-Tay. You can tell us." "He did stand you up, didn't he?" Jules says in a condescendingly sweet voice, as if she's talking to an animal. "Oh, no. And your mice slaved all day making you a pretty dress for the ball." "Joke's on you," I snap back dryly. "We broke up." Abigail laughs, then gives me a sarcastic grin. "Well, of course he dumped you. I mean, after a month, it stops being funny, and then it's just sad. You should have listened to me, Tay-Tay. Could have saved yourself the embarrassment." "Oh my God, Abigail. Fuck off." My last thread snaps. The bathroom goes deathly silent, and I become aware everyone is staring at us. "We get it, okay? You're a miserable cunt who mistakes bitchiness for a personality. Get a fucking life and get off my dick." I stride out of there, skin buzzing. A sort of delirious high overwhelms me as I return to the banquet hall. I'm dizzy from the lights pulsating to the music, the bodies thrumming on the dance floor. God, telling her off was so good, I want to go back for seconds. If I'd known unleashing on Abigail would feel this amazing, I would have been doing it 6 times a day. After nearly half a bottle of champagne, my taste buds feel fuzzy, and maybe my head does too, so I head for the bar and ask for a club soda with lime.
"Taylor," a voice says from behind me. "Hey, I almost didn't recognize you."
A guy slides in next to me. Tilting my head back to look at him, it takes a few inches before I realize it's Danny, one of the skyscrapers from Malone's the other night. He cleans up nicely in a sharp tux. "Do me a favor then," I say, taking my drink from the bartender, who I think was in my elementary mathematics class last semester. "Don't blow my cover. I'm in disguise."
"Oh yeah?"
Danny orders a beer and moves in a little closer.
"As what?"
"Haven't figured that out yet." He laughs for lack of anything better to say. Truthfully, I don't know either. Lately, I'm not sure what's actually me and what's a role I'm trying to please everyone else. I feel like I'm trying to live up to some expectation that becomes a little harder to define every day, never quite achieving the image I set for myself and having a harder time remembering where I got the idea in the first place. People always say we come to college to find ourselves, and yet I'm becoming less recognizable each morning.
"You look nice," is what I meant.
He says shyly. "Who are you here with?" I ask him.
"Oh, no, no one,"
he tells me.
"My parents were invited by their friends, Rachel Cohen's parents, so I kind of got told to come."
He takes an awkward swig of his beer, and I can almost see the moment he convinces himself to go for it.
"You know, I wanted to say something the other night. I mean, I should have, but I got the impression you were seeing someone."
"Oh, yeah, no, it was just a casual thing."
"So then it'd be okay if I wanted to ask you out sometime?"
Sasha and I catch each other's gaze across the room, and her eyes are alight with approval. She gives me a nod that says, "You should hit that." Then she grabs Eric and they make their way to us. I don't know how to answer his question without sounding like I'm committing to something, so I stall and take a long sip of my drink while Sasha approaches. "You found each other," she says with too much excitement, then smirks at me like I'm being punished somehow. "And neither of you have dates, so it all worked out." "Actually," I start, "I was thinking I'd go..."
"You still owe me a dance,"
Eric reminds Sasha as she puts an arm around me to stop me from running away. Taylor loves to dance. I'm going to kill her in her sleep.
Dance with me?
Danny. Sweet, shy Danny. He holds his arm out like they do in the movies, and I know he means well. And since I can either go willingly or have Sasha make a scene, I accept his invitation. The four of us make our way onto the dance floor. It's an up-tempo song, thankfully, so Danny doesn't feel compelled to hang on to me. We start out in a loose foursome until it becomes apparent that Eric and Sasha have been looking for an excuse to get all up on each other all night, and then I'm left with the awkward moves of a skyscraper who can't judge his own foot size. To be fair, I'm not giving him much to work with.
Dance with him.
Sasha leans in to hiss at me, only halfway pulling herself from Eric's grasp. I am, I snap back. She shoves me at him, which forces him to catch me. Danny's smile says he thinks it's my coy way of saying, please hold me closer, to which he obliges. I tense up, but he doesn't seem to notice. Sasha meets my eyes again with an insistent look that says, try, damn it. But I can't. My head's stuck on wondering what's happening with Connor and Kai. Has he made the drop? Is he safe? Not that I think Connor can't handle himself, but what if something went wrong? 10 grand is a lot of money to be carrying around. He could have gotten stopped by police, or worse. There are 100 ways tonight might have gone wrong for him, and I can't even find out if he's okay. He'd just ignore my call, and then I'm right back where I started. Worrying about him? Afraid for him. It occurs to me I could have done more. I should have told his roommates or Hunter to stop him, or to watch his back at least. Damn it. Why didn't I do that? If something happens to Connor, I'd never forgive myself. I've just decided I have to make a call when I hear a low growl of warning, and Danny and I are suddenly yanked apart. 33. Taylor.
What the hell, man?
Danny shoots forward to confront the intruder while I stand there blinking in confusion. What the hell indeed? What is Connor doing here?
You're done here.
A tuxedo-clad Connor answers, his tone cool and efficient.
I'm sorry, what?
Danny frowns, takes another step. Although he stands a few inches taller, his build is slight compared to Connor's more muscular frame.
You heard me.
Tension pours off of him, and there's a barely contained fury in his eyes as they burn through mine.
Thanks very much, but you can go now. Hey!
Eric steps beside his teammate.
I don't know who you are, but you can't be, I'm her boyfriend.
Connor snaps, but his intense stare remains fixed on me.
Taylor?
Danny prompts.
He your boyfriend?
I glance at Danny, then back at Connor, and I'm momentarily startled. Connor standing there under the flashing lights in a tailored black tuxedo, his hair combed back from his face. It's like meeting him again for the first time. I'm struck by the pure sexual magnetism of this man. For the last week, I'd been so busy being mad at him that I'd forgotten how hot he is. Enough to turn the heads of nearly every female in the room. Even a few alumni are peeking over their shoulders while their middle-aged husbands take a turn at feeling inadequate after leering at 20-year-olds all night. What are you doing here? I finally ask, ignoring Danny's question. Sasha grabs my hand and squeezes it. I don't know if it's for moral support or she's thinking of making a run for it with me, but I squeeze back even though I can't rip my eyes from Connor's.
You invited me,
he says thickly. And then you dumped me. The anger returns without warning, and I cling tighter to my best friend's hand. Consider that your invitation revoked. It also means you don't get a say in who I dance with.
The hell I don't,
he growls. He takes my other hand and pulls me forward. Like a fool, I allow my grasp to slip from Sasha's. What are you doing? I demand, with bitterness searing on my tongue. He tugs me against him and holds me close, and it's like my body remembers even if my head is trying to forget.
Dancing with you.
I don't want to dance. And yet I melt into him, not because he wants me to, but because despite the anger and hurt, my nerves respond to his touch. It's simply natural with him. I look over my shoulder, seeking out Danny's gaze, and I know he reads the apology in my eyes because he nods ruefully. Sweet, shy Danny. Life would be so much easier if he was the one my heart pounded for. But he's not, because life isn't fucking fair.
We need to talk,
Connor says. I have nothing to say to you.
Good. That'll make this easier,
he replies, guiding us to the beat. He moves and I move with him, not hearing the music so much as feeling his intention. It's a charged, fervent, passionate exchange, as if our bodies are fighting to put themselves back together.
I'm sorry, Taylor, for all of it. Ignoring you and blowing off tonight. I didn't mean any of it.
You left, I tell him, with all the repressed rage that has built inside me over the last week. You walked out on me. He nods sadly.
I was ashamed. I didn't know how to talk to you about what was happening.
You broke up with me. The accusation hangs in the air. Even while our bodies touch and our eyes meet, there's still distance between us, an electric fence of regrets and betrayals.
You backed me into a corner. I didn't know what else to do.
You're an asshole, I say, seething at the pain he's put me through this week. It doesn't just go away because he shows up here in a good-looking tux.
You look gorgeous tonight.
Shut up.
I mean it.
He presses a kiss to my neck, and my mind flashes back to the last time we were together, lying on my bed, his mouth, his bare skin against mine. Stop it. I push him away because I can't think when he's touching me. I can't breathe. You tossed me aside, and it was so easy for you. It's not just that you blew me off and broke up with me. It's what you chose to do instead of just talking to me. You'd rather lose me than tell the truth. My eyes start stinging. You made me feel like shit, Connor.
I know, babe.
Fuck. He bites out, messing up his hair as he scrubs his hands through it. I suddenly realize others have stopped to watch the drama unfolding, and I fight the urge to sprint under a table.
I didn't give him the money, Taylor.
What?
I was halfway to Boston, and I couldn't get your face out of my head, so I turned around. Couldn't go through with it, knowing what I was doing to us.
His voice cracks.
Because the worst thing about all of this, the worst thing I could have possibly done, was lose your respect. Nothing else matters if you hate me.
If that were actually true...
Damn it, T, I'm trying to say I'm in love with you.
And before I can blink, he kisses me. All his regret and conviction distilled into the warm, engulfing sensation of our lips meeting. In his arms, I feel steady again, finally upright after being thrown askew, because when we aren't together, the world feels misaligned. Connor gives me balance, sets the ground flat again. When our lips part, he cups my face with one hand, dragging his thumb across my cheek.
I mean it. I'm stupidly in love with you. I should have said it sooner. I'd blame repeated head trauma, but I was just an idiot. I'm sorry.
I'm still mad at you, I tell him honestly, though with a little less ferocity.
I know.
He smiles, a bit sad, still sweet.
I'm prepared to do some pretty intense groveling.
I catch movement from the corner of my eye and turn to see Charlotte making a beeline for us with scowling church lady eyes. Well, you've caused a scene and everyone is looking at us, I say, so you can start earning my forgiveness if you get us the hell out of here. Connor surveys the dance floor, his silver eyes sweeping over our audience of Kappas and their dates and the scandalized blue-blooded alumni glowering in disapproval. Then he bestows his familiar impish grin onto the crowd.
Show's over, folks,
he announces.
Good night.
He entwines his fingers with mine, and together we make our escape. I've always hated parties anyway.
34. Connor. Taylor invites me into her apartment, and we take turns not knowing where to stand or how to sit. She tries the couch first, but she has too much to say and it doesn't all quite come out in the order she wants to say it until she gets some traction under her feet and starts circling the room. So I take the couch next, except my muscles are still burning off the adrenaline and the lactic acid is building up. So I paced myself into a corner trying to work out if she can love me back or if I've already lost her for good.
I spent all this time trying to understand why you were being like this, she's saying. And without any input from you, I was left with all these worst-case scenarios.
I hang my head. I get it.
Like I was a bet. Or you finally saw me naked and were like, yeah, no. Or some sick part of you just liked knowing you could hurt me.
I'd never.
And so you have to understand that even though it's all cleared up now, I've already lived these scenarios in my mind,
Taylor says quietly.
They didn't happen, but they also did, you know? In my heart, you dumped me this week because I wouldn't fuck you, because your boys put you up to it, because you met someone else. I put myself through the ringer because you were too chicken shit to communicate with me.
I know, I say, hands in my pockets, staring at the floor. I realize now that the damage is done, that no matter the grand gestures and sincere apologies, sometimes you hurt people too much and push them too far. There's a limit to what you can ask someone to endure for your bullshit, and I'm terrified Taylor has reached her limit with me.
You have to give me more than that, Con. I believe you're sorry, but I have to know I'm not signing myself up to get run over again.
I clear my throat to rid it of the gravel lodged there. I didn't want you to know me this way. I came to Briar to be better, and for a while I thought I'd escaped my past. I swallow. I did such a good job convincing myself I'd made a clean getaway that I stopped looking over my shoulder. Hell, I even started to believe I was a different person. Somewhere along the way, I think I forgot why I kept people at a distance, and then you happened. I mean, Taylor, I never saw you coming. It was shit timing for us, but I can't regret trying.
What happened? She asks.
Huh?
Tonight, she clarifies. You took the money and left me at your house. Then what?
Taylor crosses her arms, watching me. It's difficult to completely make out her expression because it's dark in her apartment. She turned on the hall light when we walked in, but not the lamp in the living room. It's almost like we were both afraid to look at ourselves. We needed to retreat into the shadows. Orange lines cut across her tight black dress from the streetlights prying through the blinds. I concentrate on the lines while I lay it out for her. How I turned into a shivering sack of nerves on the side of the road. How I broke the news to Kai and took the money back to Hunter. And after I left Hunter's, I called my mom. I confess. I had her put Max on the phone too, which didn't go over great considering they're 3 hours behind us, so Mom thought I was in the hospital or something. Taylor leans against the opposite wall from me.
How did that go?
I told them everything. I said I was sorry, that I'd fucked up and should have come clean a long time ago, but I was afraid and ashamed. We left it at that. Mom was obviously shocked and disappointed. Max didn't say a lot. I bite the inside of my cheek. There will be fallout for sure, but for now I think they're processing. I don't mention the possibility that Max might stop paying my tuition, or that Mom might yank me back to California. Hell, if Briar's dean knew I orchestrated a B&E of my own house, I'd probably be expelled. All this pain and suffering, and there are still a dozen ways I could lose Taylor, my family, my team, and everything I've worked for, which would be no less than I deserve. I wouldn't be the first person to suffer from a malignant lack of consequences. I'm due.
I have serious reservations about the fact that you lied for so long about something so big,
Taylor says, and there's still an entire room between us. I understand.
And it still hurts that you were willing to put me through so much pain to cover for your mistake.
You're right.
but I believe in partial credit.
She approaches me, slow, tentative. She's a fucking vision in that curve-hugging dress, her sultry makeup, blonde hair perfectly done. It breaks my heart she went through so much trouble for tonight, and I robbed her of possibilities.
You made a dozen wrong choices to get here, but you eventually made the right one. That counts for something.
So where does that leave me? I ask, growing more nervous for the answer.
I'd say a solid C-.
So, a hopeful smirk pulls at my mouth, and I smother that shit real quick. Still passing? Taylor holds up her thumb and index finger to show me the thin slice of light between them. I'll take it. She finally reaches me, sliding her hands down the satin lapels of my tuxedo jacket.
You seemed a little jealous back there at the gala.
I will break that dude's hand if he touched you, I tell her with no hesitation.
We were broken up,
she reminds me. Every time those words leave her lips, it cuts a little deeper. I'm a dickhead, I admit. But he's suicidal if he thought he'd try to hit that. She cracks a smile, which melts the tension that's been coiled in my shoulders for days. If I can still make her laugh, maybe there's hope for us yet. Pensive, she tips her head slightly.
It was kinda hot.
Was it? This is sounding less like a rejection.
Oh, for sure. I'm not one of those super mature people who think jealousy is a character flaw. I fucking eat that shit up.
My grin springs free. I'll remember that.
Yeah, you know, Abigail's boyfriend is constantly drooling over my tits, so if later you want to do donuts on his frat's lawn, I'm all about that petty life.
Fuck, I love you. This girl makes me laugh like no one else, even when things are heavy. And especially when they're awkward, she finds the joy in the deepest suck.
About that?
She starts toying with the buttons on my shirt. Hesitation creases her forehead for a moment. I mean it, with all my heart. I wouldn't fuck with someone like that.
You love me.
I can't tell if it's a question or a statement, but I treat it like the former. I love you, T. I don't even know when I figured it out. Maybe when I pulled the car over, or on the drive back, or when my fingers were shaking so much I could barely tie this stupid bow tie. All I could think about was getting to you, and how every minute you were out there thinking I didn't give a shit was fucking killing me. I just knew. She peers up at me under thick, sooty lashes.
Show me.
I will. If you give me the chance to...
No.
Her fingers splay across my chest, push my jacket off my shoulders, and let it fall to the floor.
Show me.
I need no more encouragement than her teeth pulling at her bottom lip. Lifting her into my arms, I bring my mouth to hers and kiss her. We may have faltered as a couple, but this part still feels right. When we kiss, I can make sense of things. With her in my arms, I can see the way ahead for what we could become. Taylor locks her legs around my waist as I walk us to her bedroom and sit on the end of her bed. She settles in my lap, her delicate fingers tangled in my hair. Her nails gently scratch at the back of my neck and set every nerve on fire. I'm hard as granite, and she grinds on my dick. All I want to do is tear her out of this dress. But I know I have to go slow or I'll push her away. Instead, I slide my hands up the outside of her thighs, pushing fabric out of my way. She shifts, encouraging me, until I find the bare skin of her ass and feel the delicate lace of her underwear. She had plans, all right. I missed you, I tell her. It's been too long since I really looked at her. I think a part of me was using Kai and the fear of confessing to Taylor as a crutch to not acknowledge the depth of my feelings for her. Because if they weren't real, I had nothing to lose. If she left me, I didn't have to figure out how to be good enough for her.
I missed us.
Taylor tugs my shirt out of my waistband. She starts unbuttoning it, undoing my tie. I let her discard layers until she's skimming her fingers across my bare chest. God, you're pretty. My muscles twitch under her touch. You're beautiful, I tell her earnestly. She always blushes, rolls her eyes when I say that. I get it. She can't see herself that way any more than I was willing to believe I could still be a decent person. She just needs someone to help her believe. I'm not going to stop trying to convince you, I warn. I don't want you to. She kisses me, then climbs off my lap to stand with her back to me. Help me. As my pulse quickens, I slowly drag her zipper down, then watch her step out of her dress. I know she gets nervous about being so exposed, so I don't give her a moment to feel self-conscious. Wrapping her in my arms, I pull her back down to the bed to lie against the pillows, settling myself between her legs. She hooks one smooth leg around my hips as I pull her bra off to kiss across her chest, squeezing her tits. My lips travel south from her nipples to her stomach, while my fingers slip her lacy panties down her legs and spread her pussy from my tongue. I know she's close to orgasm when I feel her tugging at the duvet, digging her nails into the fabric. Her body trembles, back arches. I slide two fingers inside her impossibly tight channel and rise on my knees to watch her shatter for me. It's the hottest thing I've ever seen. With a muffled moan because she's biting her lip, she shakes and clenches around my hand. That's it, baby, I coax, loving the flush of her cheeks, that same rosy hue on her tits, the sexy breaths leaving her mouth. While my fingers are still lodged inside her, Taylor tugs me down, kissing me deeply while her hands stretch for my zipper. I want you, she says, breathing hard. She gets the button open, then the zipper, then shoves my trousers down my hips. Grinning at her impatience, I kick my pants and briefs free from my legs and send them flying across the room. The moment I'm fully naked, an urgent Taylor encourages my hips forward to meet hers and whispers the two sweetest words I've ever heard. I'm ready. I search her eyes, my dick hard against her pussy. Are you sure? My voice is a bit hoarse. You know you don't have to do this tonight. I meant what I said before. I'm not in a hurry. She reaches over to her nightstand and pulls out a condom. I'm sure. Our mouths collide again, and somehow it feels new, like learning each other for the first time. Supporting my weight on my forearm, I use my free hand to slide the condom down my shaft. Just go slow, she says, when I'm once again settled between her legs. Promise. I kiss that cute little mole over the corner of her mouth, then press my lips to hers. Just relax. She's so tight, her body still clenched. Relax, babe. I got you. With a deep breath, she lets go. Her body softens. As slow as I can, I push inside her. I grit my teeth, allowing her to adjust before I move again. Just a little. Just enough to make us both take in a sharp breath. You okay? I whisper. Taylor nods, her turquoise eyes shining with trust, need, arousal. She sucks in another breath, then grabs my hips to bring me closer. She's perfect. Warm and tight, squeezing my dick every time I pull back and gently, achingly plunge back into her. More than that, though, her nails softly drag down my back and it's like my fucking soul trembles. She licks my neck and my mind is wiped of everything but her voice, her taste. I forget where I am, who I am. There's just this moment and the space between us, her softness and her breath against my skin. Too quickly, though, my climax builds. I want to make it last for her, but this feels too good, and every time she arches her back, I can't help but draw every ounce of pleasure I can get from her body. Baby, I choke out. The pleasure swimming on her face brings me dangerously closer to the edge. I promise I will spend every second of this relationship fucking you so good and giving you hundreds and thousands of orgasms, but right now, I groan against her neck, my hips flexing forward, fast and erratic. Right now, I need to. I come so hard I see stars shattering against the perfection that is her body. When the rush of pleasure subsides, I pull out to discard the condom in the small wastebasket under her nightstand. Lying on my back, I bring Taylor to rest against my chest, threading my fingers through her soft hair. After a few minutes, she tilts her head up to place a kiss under the corner of my jaw. I love you, too.
35. Taylor. Sasha texts me on my way into my co-op class at the elementary school, something to the effect of, "Hey, bitch, if you get a chance, take that hockey stick out of your mouth for 5 seconds and text me," which is her endearing way of saying she misses me. I take full responsibility for our dwindling amount of girl time. After patching things up with Connor, he and I have spent every day together for the past week. Now it's May. Finals are only a couple weeks away, and I'm a little ashamed to admit that what used to be study time with Sasha at the Kappa house has become failing to study with Connor at my place until we give up and get naked. Turns out, sex is good. I sure do like sex, especially sex with Connor. Although, as it also turns out, sex is terribly distracting. Hard as I've tried, my reading comprehension skills tank when he's trying to tear off my clothes. I did make it to the Kappa house for the election, however. No surprise there. Abigail won. Though, to ask her, she was just elected supreme leader for life. I expect she'll soon have portraits of herself riding dolphins and shooting lasers out of her eyes hanging in every room. Sasha and I were two of only 4 protest votes against her. I'm a pessimist, and even I thought the resistance had greater numbers in the House than that. I guess we'll all have to get used to bowing down to our new supreme leader. The thought of spending a year under Abigail's rule turns my stomach. It might have been a secret ballot, but she knows damn well I cast one of the votes against her, and I have no doubt she'll make me pay dearly for that show of dissent. How, I'm not sure yet, but knowing Abigail, it won't be pretty. If it weren't for all the time and effort I've already contributed to Kappa Chi, I'd consider leaving the sorority. But at least I have Sasha as an ally. Besides, being a Kappa means a support network of professional connections for life. I didn't assimilate into the collective just to blow up my future capitals so close to the end. So, one more year. If Abigail really runs things off the rails, Sasha and I can mount the insurrection. Now, in Mrs. Gardner's first grade class, I'm helping the kids work on collages they're making about the books they read in class this week. The room is the quietest it's been all day. Everyone has their heads down, eyes focused. They're cutting pictures out of old magazines and gluing their creations on poster board. Thank goodness for glue sticks. I've only had to wash glue out of one girl's hair today. Mrs. Gardner banned liquid glue after a major catastrophe led to 3 emergency haircuts. I'll never understand how kids manage to constantly find new ways to attach themselves to each other. "Miss Marsh?" Ellen raises her hand at her desk. "That's looking good," I tell her when I come around the room to her seat. "I can't find a mouse. I looked through all these." At her feet, there's a pile of mangled magazines and torn loose pages. All month, Mrs. Gardner and I scoured Hastings for unwanted magazines. Doctor's offices, libraries, used bookstores. Thankfully, there's always someone trying to pawn off 30 years of National Geographics and Highlights. Trouble is, when you've got more than 20 kids all reading about a mouse, the rodent supply tends to get a bit thin. What if we draw a mouse on some colored paper? I suggest. I'm not good at drawing, she pouts, shoving another stack of loose pages to the floor. I know the feeling. As a kid, I was a high-strung, type A perfectionist who tended towards self-critical. I'd get a grand design in my head and then lose my shit when I couldn't materialize it into being. I've been banned from several pottery painting places in Cambridge, in fact. Not my greatest moment. Everyone can be good at drawing, I lie. The best thing about art is that everyone's is different. There are no rules. I pull out some fresh sheets of colored paper and draw a few simple shapes as an example. See, you can draw a triangle head and an oval body with some little feet and ears, then cut those out and paste them together to make a collage mouse. It's called abstract. They hang stuff like that in museums. Can I make it a purple mouse? Ellen, the girl wearing a purple hair scrunchie and purple overalls with matching purple shoes, asks. Shocking. You can make it any color you want. Delighted, she gets to work with her crayons. I'm moving to another desk when a knock sounds on the classroom door. I look over to see Connor peeking through the window. He's picking me up today, but he's still a few minutes early. He pokes his head inside as I walk over.
Sorry,
he says, glancing around.
I was just curious what you looked like in a classroom.
There's been a lightness to him this week. He's smiling again, always energetic and in a good mood. It's a nice side of Connor, even if I know it can't last. No one is this happy all the time, and that's okay. I don't mind grumpy Connor either. I just can't help taking pleasure in knowing some part of his positive attitude is because of me. And sex. Maybe mostly sex. Am I different? I ask him. Connor gives me a lingering examination from top to bottom.
I like your teacher clothes.
I won't lie, I did go a bit overboard at the start of the semester with a whole Zooey Deschanel vibe. Lots of retro skirts and primary colors. I guess, in my head, that was the part I wanted to play, because it's important when you walk into a room where you're outnumbered by tiny creatures 20-1 that you display confidence, or they'll eat you alive. Yeah, I say, doing a little twirl and curtsy.
Mm-hmm.
He licks his lips and shoves his hands in his pockets, which I've come to learn is his way of trying to hide a simmy while he's thinking dirty thoughts.
You're keeping that on when we get home.
That's another thing that's crept into our vocabulary. Home. His place or mine, when we're going to either one or spending the night, it's always home. The distinction between them has blurred. Miss Marsh, one of the girls calls to me. Is that your boyfriend? The rest of the class answers with ohs and laughter. Fortunately, Mrs. Gardner is out of the room, or I would have made Connor leave ASAP. This close to my final evaluation, I can't have her thinking I'm not focused on the kids. Okay, I tell him. Get out of here before Ms. Carruthers next door calls security on you.
See you outside.
He plants a kiss on my cheek and winks at the kids watching us. Go! I all but slam the door in his face, smothering a smile. Miss Marsh has a boyfriend, Miss Marsh has a boyfriend, the kids chant, growing louder and more excited in their taunting. Damn it, if they keep this up, Ms. Carruthers will come storming in to complain about the noise. I hold my index finger to my lips and raise my other hand. One by one, each student mimics the pose until they're all silent again. Just call me the kid whisperer. Mrs. Gardner will be back soon and the bell's about to ring, I remind the class. You better be done with your collages or there won't be any smiley faces going on the chart today. At that, their heads snap down and they furiously return to cutting and pasting. They're only a few days away from earning a pizza party if they maintain their positive behavior streak. And I'm only a few days from passing my co-op evaluation if I can keep them docile. We're all slaves to the system. I don't know what's gotten into Connor today, but even on the drive to his place, he can't keep his paws to himself. Driving with one hand, his other finds its way under my skirt, up my thigh, and then he's rubbing my pussy while I clench my teeth and try not to alert the dude on a motorcycle who pulls up next to us at a red light. "Pay attention to the road," I tell him, even as I open my legs wider and slouch in my seat.
"I am."
He presses his fingers against my clit, rubbing through my panties. Pretty sure this counts as distracted driving. I want his fingers inside me so badly that my chest aches with the tightness growing in my muscles. My eyes fall closed as I imagine grinding on his hand while his teeth tug on my nipples.
"I'm always distracted when you're sitting there."
When we make it to his house, it's a mad dash to his room. His roommates aren't home yet, so hopefully we have some time to play before they show up. Connor barely shuts his door behind us before he's pushing me up against the wall and prying open my cardigan. He doesn't open it all the way, just leaves the last few buttons intact to spread my sweater around my cleavage. Fine. Maybe I wore this today just because I know he likes it. Connor licks and kisses across my collarbone, then slowly pulls down one bra cup to expose my breast while squeezing and massaging the other. He licks my nipple, sucking. My thighs squirm with the need to feel him inside me. I wrap one leg around his hips and grind on his thick erection.
"You're so damn hot,"
he mutters, yanking my bra farther down to suck on my other nipple. He presses himself against me, urgent and hungry. Then I feel him working to free himself from his jeans. He opens them just enough to pull out his cock, which he holds in one hand while rubbing the tip against my pussy.
"There's a condom in my pocket,"
he mumbles. I find it and rip it open, then roll it down on his dick. Bringing his mouth to mine, he kisses me deeply as he tugs my panties to the side. A happy, relieved moan escapes my throat when he enters me. Connor fucks me against the wall, gently at first, letting both of us get used to this position. Then harder, deeper. My hands tangle in his hair, nails digging into the back of his neck to hold on. He wraps one arm under my leg to bring it up higher and open me wider for him. Every thrust causes a burst of pleasure to cascade through my body. I lose control of my voice, overcome by the intensity. Suddenly he stops. He turns me around to face his bed and bends me over the edge. I'm panting, out of breath, while he flips my skirt up to expose my ass, running his hands over my bare skin and squeezing my cheeks.
"Is this okay?"
he asks softly, running the head of his cock against my ass. "Yes," I say, desperate for him to be inside me again. He shoves my panties down and plunges deep, holding onto my hips. I moan at the sensation of fullness and push back against him, wanting, needing him to get me off. It occurs to me that my butt is right there, out in the open, impossible to be missed in the rays of late afternoon sun streaming in through the open blinds. And yet, it doesn't seem to matter anymore. What I've learned during all my naked encounters with Connor is that the man doesn't care about my soft tummy and the dimples on my butt. Hell, forget care. He doesn't even notice. The other night when I was complaining about cellulite on the backs of my thighs, he stood there behind me and humored me for 5 minutes, searching and squinting and insisting he couldn't see anything. Then he ate me out, and I forgot what I was complaining about. Great sex has a way of building your confidence, I suppose. Or maybe I'm just growing up a little. With every stroke, our voices grow louder. I fist the sheets in my hands, legs trembling, pushing back to meet his deep thrusts.
"Fuck, babe. You feel so good."
Connor reaches his hand around me to rub my clit as he urges me to my orgasm. Biting my lip, I still can't muffle the sound when I finally come, riding his dick.
"Hey!"
3 loud knocks pound against the bedroom door.
"Some of us are trying to study. Keep it down in there unless you're going to invite us to join." "Fuck off, Foster,"
Connor shouts back. I stifle a laugh, which makes Connor groan through his teeth as my body clenches and shakes around him. He stands me upright at the foot of his bed, squeezing my breasts in his hands from behind as he makes short, quick thrusts to find his own climax. Soon he's shuddering, hugging me tight as he comes inside me.
"Why does it only get better?"
he croaks, dropping his chin on my shoulder. After he's discarded the condom, we lie together in his bed, recovering from the elated exhaustion.
"We should probably start doing this at your apartment more,"
he grumbles.
"I think they're coming home earlier just to catch us."
"Yeah, you're going to have to make them leave so I can walk out of here. Or maybe we should get a rope ladder I can hang out your window." I like drawing little shapes on Connor's abdomen as I lie across his chest. His muscles contract under my touch as I tickle him ever so lightly. He hates it, but tolerates it because he knows it amuses me. Then I hit a ticklish spot and he pinches my ass as a warning not to start something I can't finish.
"Nah, don't sweat it,"
he says in response to my escape ideas.
"It's not a walk of shame so much as a strut down the red carpet. After today, expect applause."
I laugh. I don't know if that's better.
"Or I can threaten them."
Connor kisses the top of my head.
"Whatever works for you."
About an hour later, Foster bangs on the door again to ask if we want to grab a bite with them at the diner. I'm starving, so we take turns in the shower of Connor's ensuite bathroom and then get dressed. "So," I say, wrapping my hair up in a bun, "have you talked any more to your mom and Max?" Connor sighs as he sits on the edge of the bed, pulling on a fresh shirt.
"No, I mean, I've spoken to my mom, and she's texted me a couple times to call Max. I've made an excuse about class or studying or whatever, said I'd do it later."
"So you're avoiding him." I know this isn't easy for Connor. Confessing was a huge step in the right direction, but the hard work isn't over yet. Right now, though, his anxiety about talking to his stepfather is winning out over his better judgment.
"I keep thinking if I wait another day, I'll figure out how to talk to him, you know? I'll know what to say. I'm just..."
He rubs his face, furiously combing his fingers through his damp hair. "Nervous," I supply. "I get it. I would be scared too. But eventually, it's going to happen. My best advice is, close your eyes and bite down."
"I'm embarrassed,"
he admits, leaning forward to slip on his socks.
"I've always known that Max doesn't think much of me, and now I've gone and proved him right. I knew better. Back then, I mean, I just got so angry and I fucked up."
"That's all you have to say." I stand between his legs, wrapping my arms around his broad shoulders. "Tell him the truth. You made a dumb mistake that you regret. It got way out of hand, and you're sorry." Connor draws me closer, hugging me to his chest.
"You're right."
"Have they said anything about what's going to happen to Kai?"
"I didn't mention his name. I told Kai I wouldn't if he left me alone. As it is, Max doesn't want to press charges since insurance paid out. It'd be more hassle than it's worth, so that's a small victory, I guess."
"You'll do the right thing." I kiss him on the cheek, because I have faith in him, and I know as well as anyone what a difference it makes when there are people who believe in you. In other news, my birthday is on Thursday. I was thinking about getting people together at Malone's. Nothing big, just hang out, have a few drinks.
"Whatever you want, babe." "Yo, let's go!"
Foster bangs on the door again.
"Or I'm coming in there and getting weird."
36. Connor. By the time I leave campus after class on Thursday, I have 2 missed calls from Max. I know I can't avoid him much longer, but boy do I keep trying. When I first confessed to him and my mother, I was kind of in a blind stupor of guilt and panic. Now that my head is clearer, I realize there's no part of me that wants to have the conversation.